Welcome back to Preacher Handshake. I'm Hannah.
And I'm Evan, and we're your hosts.
This week on Preacher Handshake, we talk with Reverend Davita Parnell.
Davina began serving as pastor of First Baptist Morrill in October of 2023. Prior to pastoring at FBC, Davita served congregations and young adults across Georgia and the U.S. for 20 years through the Cooperative Baptist Fellowship. Davita also has been a missionary to Russia and a campus minister on multiple college campuses in Georgia. A native of Georgia, Davita is a graduate of the University of Georgia with a BS in mathematics and Mercer University's McAfee School of Theology, where she got her MDiv. Davita is married to Mark, and they have two children, Tyler and Julia. She loves meeting new people, is genuinely curious about everything, enjoys staying active, and always ready to travel.
I really loved our conversation with Davita. She's somebody that I met a few years ago through CBF Connections, and it's funny, she asked us like, "Why did you pick me?" And I think it's really just because she was so compassionate to me in a moment when I was really trying to figure out what I wanted for the future of my ministry, what direction I wanted to go. And she's incredibly pastoral. So even though when I met her, she wasn't serving as a pastor, she is somebody who I just has always been very kind to me and is very pastoral. And I think you really hear that in her sermon. I think you really see that in the way that she talks about her congregants. You can tell just how much she deeply cares about people. And I think it's really interesting to hear somebody who is so personal coming through her preaching. So I really enjoyed our conversation.
Yeah, I think what stood out to me in the sermon and in the episode, our conversation was really just the embodiment of the text and her calling with the people that really comes through in the way that she preaches this passage. So she's able to take a psalm and it feels not like just breaking down the text, but rather like trying to live that psalm through the preaching. It's really interesting, and I just found it really powerful and helpful.
Yeah, I think I'm preaching a psalm and I'm thinking about how do I maintain the like poeticness of it and not try and break it down to like point A, point B, point C. And she does it so well, which preaching the psalms is hard.
It really is. It feels like she takes us like into a psalm rather than analyze a psalm, but like invites us to experience the psalm and experience God.
So, as always, you can listen to Davita's full sermon through the link in our show notes.
We hope you enjoy our conversation with Reverend Davita Parnell.
Well, welcome to the podcast, Davita. We're excited that you're here.
I am excited to be here too. It's a real honor to have been invited. And to think about my sermon in an analytical kind of way, I haven't done that. So this was fun.
Well, I'm so excited to have our conversation today. One of the things that we ask every guest that we have is, what's your relationship to preaching like? Have you always loved it, recently discovered it, something like that?
Well, let me say, I've only been pastoring for 2 years, and so, it's still fresh for me. And I think that's why I'm enjoying it, is because I haven't done it forever. I used to preach maybe four times a year. Of course, now it's every week. And I think it's a necessary part of the job for sure. It's not my first love, but it did. And I think when I thought about pastoring in the past, it was something I was really anxious about, preaching every week. But in the whole call process, everything about that kind of fell away, because I think, ultimately God was saying that's not the whole job for you. That's not something you need to worry or stress about. And so preaching has definitely been the most difficult aspect of being a pastor, coming at it, fairly late in life or midlife. So it's been the hardest part, of being a pastor. I enjoy it, but as they always say, it's relentless. And you're like, how am I going to do this yet again? But I just hit my 2 year anniversary yesterday, so I'm definitely celebrating the fact that I've gotten this far.
Well, congrats. And
Thank you.
I love preachers who are kind of begrudging preachers, because I think having to put that work in and really wrestle with it, you know, whether it's same thing as like when you learn how to play an instrument on a really bad instrument, you have to like work extra hard at it. If this is not natural or it doesn't come easy, like I think that there's a lot of blessing and strength that comes out of preachers who are a little bit hesitant to get into preaching.
Absolutely, absolutely.
So tell us a little bit about your congregation and your context for your sermon that we're going to listen to. Who are they? What are they like?
Good. So I pastor First Baptist Church of Morrow, Georgia. The church is about 75 people in size. Morrow is a suburb of Atlanta, of the Atlanta metro area, near the airport, which is on the south side of Atlanta. The church is predominantly senior adults. There are very few children or youth, some young adults, some middle-aged folks, but a lot of senior adults. The community is very different from the church in terms, they don't necessarily reflect one another. Exactly. The community is predominantly African American, Hispanic, and Asian, actually Vietnamese in particular. And we have some of that diversity in the church, but not nearly as much as I'd like. They are a church that is extremely hands-on, and they love to do things. They're an active church. They're a do-it-yourself kind of people. And they're extremely welcoming and loving and generous, down to earth. They've made me, they love me, I love them. It's just been really a good fit. They're humble people. They're humble people.
The way you're describing your congregation sounds a lot like my folks in my congregation as I'm getting to know them.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's a good place.
Well, tell us a little bit about what your sermon prep process typically looks like.
Well, I'll still say that I'm not happy about my sermon prep process, only having done it for 2 years. And a lot of people have told me what their process was like, and I've tried to fit myself into those molds and have struggled with that. And so I think in the end, after I tell you my process, I've had to understand that how God works in my life and how I operate in the world are extremely unique to me, and I just need to trust that and not try to do it like someone else does. So I learned in seminary, not only in my preaching class, but even through some of the preaching lectures that took place. And I went to McAfee School of Theology at Mercer. That the most the best preparation is allowing yourself to get inside the text and to find how it connects to your own life. Find the meaning in it for yourself and then speak out of that. And so authenticity is really important to me. Sometimes it's not, you can't necessarily find a great word, but that's the approach I start with. So almost like Lectio Divina, reading, praying the text, and not stressing about it the first day. Early in the week when I try to read it, and then you honestly, it usually ends up being Thursday by the time I can really start working on the sermon. And so I will, and I drive, I commute about 40 minutes. Sometimes it's an hour from my house to the church. So oftentimes I'll listen to podcasts. I'll listen to the scripture actually being read as I ride. And just let it sink in. And then by Thursday, I'm able to do more reading. And then on my day off, Friday and Saturday is when I actually start writing it. And I think the frustrating part about it for me is I wish that I could do it sooner in the week. But something about the adrenaline and the deadline, all of that is what forces it out for me on paper, you know? And that's really frustrating, but like I said in the beginning, I've tried to become comfortable with that and understand that that's just how I work. I also get a lot of the words and the phrasing and the thoughts when I'm not working on it, while I'm cutting the grass, while I'm walking the dog, you know, in the gym. And so sometimes I'll even voice text or do notes on my phone, you know, and speak into my phone and have that going throughout the week. So anyway, it's very chaotic. But that's how it happens for me.
Oh, it is like that though. It really is. Today we're looking at a sermon you preached on July 27th, 2025, entitled Essential Prayer Number 3, Wow, which is based on Psalm 145. And this is the third sermon in a series called Help Thanks Wow, coming from Anne Lamott's book of the same name.
Right.
So you begin by reading Psalm 145 in its entirety. And I love that you do that. I know I'm actually preaching a psalm this week, and there's always the tendency to like break up the passage or even just pick a shorter one. Sometimes the psalms get really long. So I'm curious, you know, what led you to preach this particular psalm as your example of wow? And why did you feel like it was really important to read it in its entirety?
Well, as we listen to the sermon and understand the structure of the psalm, I'm glad I read the whole thing. I don't think going into it, I know I didn't know, you know, that it was kind of an acrostic type psalm. So I think once I learned that, it became important to read that from, you know, from start to finish, so that you cover, you know, Aleph to, what's the last one? Tov? No. Yeah.
Yeah,
Thank
right. So.
you. You know, I work with several other female pastors, and we plan out our sermon series for the whole year. We do that in advance. We meet and we work on that. And so when we were working through this Help Thanks Wow series, we decided for the whole series to be psalm-based. And so I think also I'm a purist in a sense that I want to read the whole thing, you know, not just chop it up and read a portion of it. And so there are lots of psalms that are psalms of praise, obviously. There are tons of them. So yeah, how did I end up on that one? I think in the end, I just had to pick. You know, I had several I was looking at, and I just had to land on one, and then work with it and, you know, and see what happened. So there was no rhyme or reason in why I landed on 145.
Love that. Yeah, the Psalms, sometimes you just have to pick one.
Yeah, exactly. Just go with it. And you know, a lot of the language is the same. You see some of the same phrases in various psalms. So, you know, another one might have been just as good.
Right. Well, you talk a little bit about the structure of the psalm and a little bit of how that indicates something of the purpose of the psalm.
Even the structure, if you looked at the structure of the psalm in Hebrew, it is an acrostic psalm, which means each line of the psalm starts with a different letter of the Hebrew alphabet. So, like we would start from A to Z, it's going from Aleph to Tav. And if you, again, if you knew Hebrew, you would see that every line started with the consecutive next letter of the alphabet. And so, even in the structure of this psalm, from A to Z, from Aleph to Tav, he's trying to capture the fullness and the greatness of God.
I love how you're attentive to what's happening in the biblical languages and how you're bringing that in as you're making points. But how do you determine, you know, when it is appropriate to give that background information to your congregants?
I think I am first a teacher. And because of that, I'm always trying to educate the congregation in my sermons and throw tidbits of information in there. We also have a family in our church. The husband and the couple spent many of his growing up years in Israel as a missionary kid. And to this day, he studies Hebrew all the time, and like every day for 6 hours. And he translates the Bible himself, in a very strict, literal translation of the Hebrew. And so I'm often throwing out something in Hebrew, in some ways just, to satisfy him. But like I said, I'm always trying to educate and teach aspects of the scripture, not just interpret it. So I think it's always important to add a little bit of that in all my sermons.
Yeah, I appreciate your attentiveness to the people that you're speaking to, and knowing that they may want some of that information is really, really interesting. So, a few times throughout your message, you ask people to repeat after you or say words with you. Like in this one section where you have them repeat the word all with you.
The Lord is gracious and merciful, slow to anger, steadfast in love, abundantly good, compassionate over all, faithful in all, upholding all. Why don't you say all with me? Raising up all, giving food to all in due season, opening his hand to satisfy the desires of all, just in all, kind in all, near to all, hearing the cries of all, saving all, watching over all who love him. The word all is used 16 times in this psalm.
Well, it took them a little bit to pick up on what you were doing, I think. But by the end of it, you could hear everyone kind of participating in this. So I'm curious, is this something you ask your congregation to do often? Or why do you think it's important for us to have people participating in the sermon?
Absolutely. No, I do not do this all the time. In fact, I wasn't planning on doing this. It wasn't something scripted. I didn't go into it thinking, I'm going to get them to. But when you're in the moment and you're recognizing, even in what you're saying, how repetitive it is, I felt like it would be participatory, especially with the word all, to have us all saying the word all. And I mean, they're people who. Not off in your sermons. There are people who they don't really get antsy or anything like that. But I am now comfortable enough with the church to invite them to do things that make them a little uncomfortable sometimes. And so I don't mind inviting them to participate in doing some new things, whether it's praying differently during a certain season or even joining in the sermon. I've not done anything with like a talk back type sermon yet or, conversation, but from time to time, if the spirit moves and I think back to my sermon prep process, there's this kind of creativity that's just, it's just always there and I never know when it's going to come out. And so that was one of those moments for me.
As you mentioned your creativity, I think one of the creative things that you do is in how you apply this passage. So I love listening to this sermon, and I was struck right away because I have preached a series on Help Thinks Wow, and my wow sermon was Psalm 145. So I have
Oh,
been
yeah.
right in your shoes. So, you say you just picked one, but
Yep.
great minds, I guess. I don't know.
Yes.
But one of the things about wow that, I preached wow in multiple places. And one of the things that's tricky about it is it is feel kind of abstract, especially for like us kind of Western European descendants who like don't, feel things or whatever, right? Wow feels hard to get your head around it. And you gave some great ways to apply that. And I want to listen to that clip.
Lamott writes again, gorgeous, amazing things come into our lives when we are paying attention. Gorgeous, amazing things come into our life when we're paying attention. Astonishing material and revelation appear in our lives all the time. And I love this phrase. She says, we just have to be open for business. We just have to be open for business, receptive to God's generosity. To God who keeps on giving and keeps on giving and keeps on giving. So how do we cultivate this capacity for wonder, for praise, for awe? How do we develop eyes to see and hearts to respond with wow? I've got a long list. I'll try to keep it short. Number one, do new things.
I love this list that you provide for congregation, and you do it throughout kind of the rest of the sermon, but I wrote it down. Do new things like travel, get in nature, be around children, be around those who have not lost their capacity for awe, and remember when you did experience God in the past. It's a great application of something so hard to grab onto. How did you develop these points? How did you settle on these five?
You know, that's a great question. So I think, so I mentioned in the sermon that I was on vacation at a lake while I was working on this sermon. So it wasn't really vacation, you know, but the pace of my week was very different. And so every morning that week, I kind of approached the sermon writing process differently by just journaling. You know, I was outside, I was in nature, I was on a kayak, you know, in the middle of the lake at times with my little notepad writing down things. And so being as descriptive as I could about what I was experiencing in that moment. And so, you know, that's how some of that material came to me. But at the same time, you know, when you think about the soundtrack of your life or something like that, I feel like this is just inherently who I am. So this would be, this is all natural. This is just, these are things that are a part of me. And so I think it was easy for me to come up with this list because it's just how I approach life. And I think it was important, as you said, it's important to give something very practical for people to do. I don't often get to that point in my sermons, and that's hard sometimes, you know. And I'm not a preacher that says, okay, here are the three things you should do, or here are the three points. And so sometimes when I do that, you know, I find that people connect more to the sermon. And you know, a lot of those points, you could find overlap in them. Travel can also mean getting out in nature. You know, so I guess as I was working through them, I tried to find the points where I could delineate them and not keep them overlapping. And then to be able to illustrate it with just very personal things in my own life, you know, being in Russia and saying, wow, this is my life, you know, for a couple of years. Or looking through the eyes of my children, that they just everybody could relate to everything that I said that day. And sometimes you just know you've preached a good sermon because of that. And some days they're not so good. But I think later you ask about connecting with the people. And this was one that really connected with folks and that they remembered and they still talk about. So.
That's great. Philip Brooks famously said, you know, preaching is like truth through personality. And it just seems like your personality came all the way through in this in a really beautiful way. And yeah. That seems to be, I'm sure, why it was so easy for people to connect to it.
Thank you. And I remember in seminary, too, in that preaching class, the very first sermon I ever preached, I had the manuscript because we had to turn it in for a grade. And the preaching professor said, well, that was not you preaching. You were hiding behind the manuscript. You've got to get out from behind it. So yeah, I do have a manuscript every week, but that whole point about personality, it's really important that I try to find myself, you know, in the pulpit and to share that. So thank you.
Yeah, you seem really comfortable and seem like it is just you and like we're having a conversation. And I think it probably gives people the freedom to also be themselves. And especially in a sermon like this, where, it's almost like you're just sharing these are the ways that you've experienced it. And now you're giving people the freedom to find the ways that they experience. Wow, that's really neat. But to that, we live in a culture that is constantly vying for our attention, buy this and watch this and do this and all of that. But one of the things that you point out is that we cultivate a sense of wonder through paying attention. So, what advice or encouragement would you give to people as they're trying to discern what's worth giving our attention to?
That's a great question. I definitely think slowing down is the most important thing that we can do, because you don't notice that bush in bloom or that sunset if your head is, looking at your phone or whatever, or if you're rushing from place to place. And so I definitely think slowing down is really important, a part of that process for discernment. And then, because curiosity is an aspect of who I am, I try to follow where that curiosity takes me. And so, it may feel like a distraction sometimes, but what I end up finding is it's exactly like what I needed, to nurture my soul and my spirit. And so, even if it's, talking about even if using technology, looking up something, you end up in a rabbit down a rabbit hole, chasing this link and that link. But sometimes I allow myself to do that because even when in the sermon writing process, and I reflect on the content of my week, all of that somehow gets used in the sermon. It's just material. It's fodder for the sermon. And so, yeah, I mean, I think slowing down is important, but I also think chasing and following after those things that make you curious is really important.
I love that. It's like a holy rabbit trail you're following.
There you go. There you go.
Well, obviously, this sermon and this series is based off of Anne Lamott, but you also reference poetry a few other times in your sermon, like this one Mary Oliver poem.
Or simply getting out in nature, which is point number two. Get out in nature. Get big, but also get small with nature. Poet Mary Oliver, if you don't know her, go read her poems. She's amazing. And she's the poet of small things in nature. She notices and she names the small things. And one of her best-known poems that I love is called The Summer Day. Do you know that poem? Listen. Who made the world? Who made the swan and the black bear? Who made the grasshopper? This grasshopper, I mean, the one who has flung herself out of the grass, the one who's eating sugar out of my hand. Who is moving her jaws back and forth instead of up and down? Who is gazing around with her enormous and complicated eyes? And now she lifts her pale forearms and thoroughly washes her face. And now she snaps her wings open and floats away. I don't know what prayer is, but I do know how to pay attention. How to fall down into the grass, how to kneel down into the grass, how to be idle and blessed, how to stroll through the fields, which is what I've been doing all day, she says. Tell me, what else should I have done? Doesn't everything die at last and too soon? So tell me. What is it that you plan to do with your one wild and precious life?
Wow. I mean, I love that you read it in its entirety. It is so beautiful, and the way that, in the same way you don't break up the psalm, you didn't break up the poem. You let it speak for itself. And that was really moving. And I think you see your creativity and your personality to bring these things into your sermon. So I'm just curious, how has reading poetry impacted your preaching? How has it impacted, the sermon and the series?
Well, reading poetry was not something growing up that I enjoyed doing. Maybe some people love it when they're in high school and college, but I didn't. I found it very difficult. And it wasn't until I started participating in, various spiritual formation retreats and exercises that I was introduced to poetry as another, form of writing, a form of divine inspiration, and praying through song, praying through poetry in the same way that you might pray through scripture. I connected. I found ways to connect to it. And so, this one retreat that I remember, every day we read a different poem, and we prayed through it, and did artistic things with it, whether it was drawing or doodling or whatever. And so, I mean, that has shaped me tremendously, and has led me to use that same kind of format in leading others in small groups and retreats and that kind of thing. And so, from time to time, I do introduce the poetry into my sermons. A lot of time, it's because it's a poem that I have loved and I've remembered, and it's stuck with me just like scripture sticks with you. I don't necessarily go hunting for poems to fit what I'm trying to do. So I think reading poems like you would read scripture is just as helpful, and so then it's there in the background and you can recall it and pull it up when you need to for the sermon. So, and of course, that's a very popular poem, but I love it though that you, and this is the most interesting thing, those of us who are in the ministerial world or whatever, the preachers among us, our little bubble, we all know the same stuff. A lot of us do. We're reading the same things, but then you find that your congregation has no clue about any of this. And you're like, wow, okay, so I can say things that just feel rote in some ways to me, but they've never heard it before. And so I really love being able to, for example, bring this poem to them that none of them knew, but like everybody in my mind seems to know it, So.
Well, that's such a great point and insight and something that I think about a lot, because I think we all have that temptation of like, oh, everybody's heard this.
Yes.
And the reality is they haven't. And one of the things I love about this sermon is the way, by reading the whole psalm, the poetry there, by doing the whole poem, by even in your lists, you're poetically navigating these things as you illustrate it from your life. It really felt like to me, sometimes sermons are like, here's the argument, here's the point, we're going to break this down. What it felt like was an invitation for the people to kind of be on a spiritual retreat of, we're going to journey through this together and have an exposure both to the full text and to this full poem and see what happens in them and in their bodies as they do that. And for folks who are distracted, are doing less spiritual formation at home than maybe than we wish we all were, right? The sermon becomes an opportunity to kind of practice
Well,
our
that's
faith. So I just love that you did
thank
all of that, and I
and
it came out for me.
the other thing too is that, as you mentioned earlier, wow is this abstract concept. And so I was a little intimidated by this sermon because you're like, how am I going to capture wow? And so I knew it had to be experiential. I knew what I had to do in that sermon was put them in places and, give them things to visualize and feel. So thank you for saying that.
Yeah, you nailed it. Well, another one of the practices that you pull forth for cultivating wonder is about being around those who haven't forgotten how to appreciate wonder. So I want to listen to that clip.
But number four, be in the company of those who can see, those who have not lost their capacity for awe. There are those around us, and you know who they are. They can't help but praise God for everything. They proclaim, they declare, they recount, they extol, they sing, they celebrate God's awesome deeds. I know a few who are in this church that I look to when I don't feel very much like praising God.
So you mentioned earlier about how like preaching is not something that you are most excited about for this role. So what I want to ask about is maybe a shift away from the preaching side to the rest of the pastoral work. How do you then cultivate wow in your people, not just in your preaching? We've seen that you've done it through this sermon. But when you go on from this sermon to just pastor people, how do you model being a person who lives with awe for your people?
I try to lift up other voices. So we do testimonies during our worship services. Not every Sunday, but we try to invite, especially with certain series, we try to bring in testimony so other people can, as I said in the sermon, share how they are experiencing God. Especially on Wednesdays when we do our prayer time, we give plenty of time for people to share. But also in the way that I have tried to lead, I've modeled experimenting and not just always doing the things that we've always done, and then saying, after we've done it, celebrating, look to see, look what happened. Or actually on Pentecost every Sunday now, every year now, I'm trying to do some celebratory type event. We have a lunch, and I might have a slideshow with pictures or a video or whatever, and some testimonies, because I in a state of the church type sermon and lunch, for example, because I want them to be in that practice of reflecting and naming, noticing, and celebrating what God's doing in our church. And I think we have to do that because otherwise, and as I thought about this last week, what are we doing here? We're just coming to church and, just going through the motions. No, we're not. It's got to be more than that. And so I'm trying to always shape their hearts and their minds to pay attention to God in everything. And even we have a pastoral prayer every week, a prayers of the people, and I try to do that in that as well, name the ways that we've seen God work in our church and in our own lives.
Well, we're going to shift to some questions that we ask everybody. And the first is this: what are you most proud of this sermon?
I think what I'm most proud of is that they remembered it, that it stuck with them. And I think also I'm proud that it accomplished what I wanted it to do, that it didn't fall flat, and that at the end of it, they were saying, wow. They actually came up to me at the end and were like, wow, that was awesome. So I'm really proud of that. It felt good. And then, like I said, they've continued to bring it up. And that whole series was just really good because it gave them simple language that they could remember and that they could share with others. And one lady in particular, she told me she was driving somewhere, and she saw this woman who was needing a ride, and so she stopped and picked her up. And that woman began talking about, I don't know, some challenges in her life. And my congregant was able to offer her prayer, practice this three, these three essential prayers as ways that she could pray when she didn't know what else to pray. And so she was able to say, just tell God help. Or thanks, or wow. So, they began to take ownership of this sermon series and apply it to their own lives, but share it with others. So it's pretty awesome.
I love that. You know, we call this podcast Preacher Handshake partially because we think about how often you're done preaching and then the only feedback or comments you're getting about your sermon happens in like the handshake line afterward. And it's just good sermon, pastor, and then people move on. And so it's kind of nice when you the moments I think that stick out are when you have congregants who are telling you, this is how this is connecting for me. This is the ways I'm still thinking about it. Here's how I'm applying this. Those are really special moments. So it's exciting to hear that people are getting that from this series, it sounds like.
Yeah, it was not something I expected. Let's just say it was a wow moment.
Yeah. So, you know, this may be a bit of an unfair question,
Okay.
but what would you do differently if you could redo this sermon?
Nothing. Which is rare. But at the same time, again, all these preachers talk about how the sermon will never be perfect. You could work on it forever. It'll never be perfect. But it was good enough. It was good enough.
That's great. So here's our last question, a big one. Why do you think preaching matters today?
It is a hard question too, because those of us who do it every week wonder, and I can't even remember sometimes what I said last Sunday, because it comes so fast, and I'm like, what did I even preach about? I think it matters because we need good language, to talk about God, because so many people are not using good language to talk about God. And I remember a pastor preacher that I respected a lot, who was an excellent communicator. Years ago, he talked about the fact that words matter and that words shape people. And I'm finding that to be true as I preach. And it's not just about the one sermon. My husband also went to seminary and he pastored for a little while, but he ended up not doing that beyond a couple of years. And we talk about this, that what I see is not what happens in the one preaching moment, but the collection of the preaching moments, over time, over years, and you're shaping a people through what you say, the language that you use. It's not necessarily with the one-off sermon, but it's the continuity from week to week to week. So I do think it's important. And starting on the front end of it, you're like, what am I going to say over the next 5 years to shape them? You can't go into it like that. You can't. You just do it. And then you look back and you go, oh my gosh, look, it's working. Wow. But then you're like, who am I that I'm doing this? How is this even happening? It really is only God and through God's Spirit that this is happening. So words do matter. And this past Sunday, even I preached on. We did a series. We've done a series the last month on taking the Bible stories that we knew growing up, and preaching them and hearing them now as grown-ups. And so I did the sermon on Joshua and the Battle of Jericho. And of course, you've got a whole city of people being destroyed. And what do you do with that? And so I wrestled with all of that in the sermon. And admitted it was disturbing, but then also was able to find some theological truths that I could claim and hold on to. And this one guy after the sermon said, I've been in a fundamentalist church my whole life, and it's not working anymore. That's why I'm coming here a whole lot more. And he said, I really appreciate you modeling how to wrestle with the text, because I don't know how to do that. And so, that's why it matters. That's why it matters.
Well, Davida, thank you so much for your time today, for joining us, for sharing this gift of your preaching and your work in your community. We really look forward to hearing more sermons and staying connected.
Absolutely. And I really appreciate you inviting me to do this. You need a little boost of confidence every now and then, and y'all have given me that, so thank you.
Thanks for listening to our conversation with Reverend Davida Parnell. If you want to keep up with Davida, her work, or listen to her full sermon, check out the links in our show notes. If you enjoyed this episode, please like and follow us on whatever platform you get your podcasts and share with your friends. You can keep up with all things Preacher Handshake on our Instagram at Preacher Handshake, or email us your questions or preacher recommendations at preacherhandshake@gmail.com. Thanks for listening, and see you next time.